Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll have music and conversation with Mel Carter, part of the lineup with Chris Montez, Terry Johnson's Flamingos, and Carla Cook with Legends of Doo-Wop, Soul, and Rock and Roll. That'll be in Upland August 5th. Lillian Vasquez speaks with Ron Adams, artistic director for the Redlands Theater Festival. We're going to start with more on an upcoming event in Hemet through the Diamond Valley Arts Council. It started off as a jam and tribute to area musician and educator Jeff Tower. It still will be, and it's open to the public. But with Tower having passed away July 4th, it will now serve as a memorial as well. I spoke with Diamond Valley Arts Council board member Jason Strain on Monday about the event, but also about Jeff Tower.
Jeff Tower was instrumental in the 70s and 80s in developing a jazz program in Hemet. He was brought to Hemet High in 1974 by Larry Maddox, who was actually the very first kind of really music educator in the Valley that really developed a substantial program. And by bringing Jeff in, Jeff took the band program into the jazz realm and really developed a kind of powerhouse program where kids were ready to go on to a music college or play professionally by the time they got done.
Wow. Stepping back just slightly, so what was the music program before Jeff Tower came along? What were they instilling in kids at this point?
Larry had begun the music program, and it was mainly a band program, marching and whatnot, and he was working on more of a well-rounded music education and music appreciation. By bringing Jeff in, he added the jazz element to the program, which kind of took a life of its own on. By the 80s, the jazz group was well-known all over the country and competed in heavy divisions across the country and won.
And how long did it take starting the program and then getting it to the point where it was, because we're talking about going from no jazz instruction at all to a fairly short time before, like you said, people were competing at the national level then.
Right. And it only took just a very few number of years, but, you know, that was who Jeff was. Jeff was very passionate. He was driven and drove his kids as well. He expected them to work and to work hard, and he kind of fostered that amongst his students. He really encouraged them to buckle down, learn. He was all about hard work.
When did you have him as an instructor?
I had him between 1990 and 93.
Okay. Then you can talk from personal experience then. You were saying just a few moments ago that he took people from, I guess this would really start at middle school and going through high school level, but in essence getting ready for performance without going through the college level? Or are we talking about getting people?
Absolutely. There were one of two ways you could go. Some kids were, you know, absolutely ready by the time they got out of high school to move on right into professional playing. And there were a number of people that did. And then others went on and furthered their music education and either became professional musicians or a lot of instructors. We've got a number of alumni that are band teachers. And in fact, the current band director at Hemet High is a Hemet High alumni.
Okay. And I guess one of the previous band instructors that folks on the KVCR airwaves would know, and that is Sean Longstreet. He's another Tower alumni?
Yes. Okay. Hey, he's a product of the Hemet Music System and had Jeff and is one of our proud alumni there.
One of the success stories. Let's talk about this again. This is the Jeff Tower Alumni and Friend Jam. What all is going to be happening on this day? Music, talks, well, what's happening?
What we're trying to do is show how much he really meant to the students in the community. What we're going to do is we're putting on a night from his friends who played with him and knew him and his alumni. And then we're going to have a night of talking about Jeff and his quirkiness. We're going to be playing some music and celebrating everything that Jeff really instilled in us as students as well as his friends.
Okay. Who are some of the bands that are going to be performing on this? And again, this is going to be July 13th at the Diamond Valley Arts Council, the gallery and performance venue.
Yes. There's a saxophonist, Jeff Elwood, will be there. Dave Hitchings will be playing drums. We'll have performance via video from Brandon Fields from L.A. We'll have Jesse J., you may know as Jesse Jazz or Jessica Ariano. I think Brian Head of Foreigner and Supertramp will be doing a performance video that he'll be sending in. I think Marshall Hawkins will be doing something. I think Sean's going to do a video. And as far as the live stuff goes, we're still putting together the rest of the musicians that are calling in and trying to put a lineup together.
And I guess this is the kind of thing that so many people knew Jeff Tower that I suppose as soon as they're hearing about this, they're hoping to come on board.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's being done for you. People are calling and asking if they can perform as well?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And that's the thing, is we're trying to reach out as much as we can to the greater Los Angeles and Southern California area, as well as across the country, because Jeff was not only a music teacher in Hemet, he was a professional musician that played all over the place. He played on The Tonight Show fairly regularly, as well as some other things. And he was also a clinician all over Southern California. So there were kids that weren't even in his program that he touched through clinics and adjudication and all the various other ways he was involved in music. So we're trying to reach out to all of those people and let them know what's going on. And as we do, there are people emailing and saying, hey, I want to be involved. How can I do it? And all they need to do is email me at jason@thedvac.org, and I'm putting together that list of folks and emailing them back to let them know, hey, I got you, and we'll be expecting you. We're going to try to have a good backline and rhythm section, so all they'll need to do is bring their instruments and come in and play.
Oh, perfect, perfect. You've got the rhythm section, and you're just really calling for leads.
Right.
Okay, cool, cool. And now you just mentioned your email, but is there a website for this anywhere, or the Facebook flyers, are there updates being added as you get them? Is there a central place that people can go for more info?
Yes, they can go to Jeff Tower's Facebook site. You just look for Jeff Tower on Facebook,
Okay. And
the information is there, as well as we do have an event set up for that day, the Jeff Tower Alumni Friends Jam. That is a dynamic place where they can add info, add pictures, and whatnot. And there's a link to an email address there as well, where you can send pictures. And then you can also get info from the Diamond Valley Arts Council's website at thedvac.org.
Okay, so people can look through Facebook, Jeff Tower, and then Facebook, the Jeff Tower Alumni Friend Jam, and then also on the web at thedvac.org. That's Diamond Valley Arts Council, thedvac.org. How did you initially start lining up some of these bands, by the way?
I was contacted, and I found out about Jeff's situation, and I had come to the board and asked that we possibly do an event. And at the same time that I was thinking about doing this, Brian Head, who is an alumni of Jeff's, had an idea that he wanted to do an event as well. And we started talking. Brian is one of our contributors at the DVAC.
Okay.
And we kind of put our heads together, and we at least want to be able to show him the support that he has.
Beautiful. So again, this is going to be Thursday, July 13th, the Jeff Tower Alumni and Friend Jam. This is at the DVAC Gallery and Performance Venue there on Harvard Street.
Yep, it's at the Diamond Valley Arts Center at 123 North Harvard Street in Hemet.
And if you could list off those other ways that people can either contact you and also the sites for more information, please, one more time.
Sure. If you need more information on the event, you can contact myself at jason@thedvac.org. You can also log on to thedvac.org for information on the event, as well as buying tickets. And you can also find out information on the Facebook website. Go on to Facebook and search for Jeff Tower or the Jeff Tower Alumni Friend Jam. That's an event that we have set up on Facebook as well.
Beautiful. And then also, again, thedvac.org.
That's correct.
That's Jason Strain, board member with the Diamond Valley Arts Council. Once again, the tribute and memorial to Jeff Tower is July 13th at the Diamond Valley Arts Center, 123 Harvard Street in Hemet. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Online at kvcrnews.org, I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we have music and conversation with Mel Carter, part of the lineup with legends of doo-wop, soul, and rock and roll. That's coming soon to Upland. First, though, we have Lillian Vasquez with more on something that happens in Redlands each year, the Redlands Theater Festival.
That's the sound of construction that goes on for days in order to build the sets needed for the season's five plays. The Redlands Theater Festival in Prospect Park will once again bring life to the stage for their 45th season. I spoke with Ron Adams, the artistic producer, during a break from construction. It was a hot summer day, so we sat down in the air-conditioned carriage house adjacent to the theater to chat about RTF and the new season's lineup.
Tell me a little bit of the history. I know it came from at least one man's vision.
Cliff Cavanella was a young theater professor straight out of BYU, and he started a little theater group on the island of Lanai in Hawaii called the Pine Island Players, and he just grabbed some local talent, anybody he could grab, whether they had ever been on a stage or not, and he put on a play, Harvey, I believe, the play about the big rabbit, and he thought there might have been a future there on the island, but he took a job here in California at Valley College and was looking for a place to live, so he was driving around Redlands and the area, came across Prospect Park and fell in love with the park, as most people do when they see it for the very first time, and he saw this pasture land, little meadow, where there was some deer grazing, and instantly he thought, there needs to be a theater here. This is perfect spot for a theater. So he got some students together from Valley College and Crafton, and they came up here with a bulldozer and like $50 to rent some tools and literally carved terraces in the dirt and threw some hay down, some folding chairs, built a little stage, threw up some 4x4s for lighting, posts for the lighting, and put on three plays. And it was very charming. It was outdoors. It was in the evening when the stars are out. There were lanterns on the road leading up. So instantly it set you in the mood for something special. And it was very special that first year.
Describe what it is today.
Well, 45 years later, here we are in the same pasture land, but it doesn't look like a pasture anymore. We've got a big permanent theater structure. We have permanent seating, a permanent tech booth, and it's just a great facility, a great campus, if you will. We also have access to the Carriage House now, which is right next door. And we also partner with the Kimberly Crest Mansion for different events. So it is very much a artistic three-way grand slam, if you will, artistically. We try to bring the people of Redlands a lot of culture, a lot of art, a lot of theater and music. But specifically at the theater, we are branching out into other areas other than just a play at night. We're offering some paint nights where you can sip a little wine and paint a picture. Maybe you can come up and participate that way. We also have some dinner nights, a little dinner before theater events. So there's a lot that we're branching out into. And, of course, Spelling Bee, which is one of the five shows we're doing, is audience participation. And we get people from all walks of life who have never been on the stage before having a hilarious time in that show. And you're definitely going to come out and see that one or be a part of it. There'll be a little table set up. And you can sign in your name to be one of the participants, and they'll see if they can pull your name to be on stage.
Oh, well, that's very cool. So somewhat new this year, this season, is the dinner, and they're kind of thematic, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about those different themed dinners that you're going to have here. They correlate with whatever play is on that night, right?
There are three different dinner nights, and they do correlate with three of our shows. For example, we're doing the musical The Mystery of Edwin Drood. So, of course, British Bangers and Mash will be a nice evening meal. That's on Friday, July 21st. And then, of course, Spelling Bee that I talked about earlier, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. The lunch ladies are going to be serving hamburgers, grilled cheese sandwiches, fries, just like school time. And that's going to be on Saturday, July 29th. That should be a lot of fun. And then Quilters, which is our tribute to Pioneer Ladies, we have a Chuck Wagon Chow Night on Saturday, August the 5th. We got chili. There's even vegetarian chili. Salad, cornbread muffins, lemonade.
So it's theater under the stars. It could be dinner under the stars. If they're not participating in one of the themed nights, guests are invited to picnic before the play, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's been a tradition for many, many decades now. The patrons will come up, throw a blanket on the grass, have a nice little picnic meal. I've seen them get very elaborate. I've seen candelabras out there and little tables. And it's very charming. Candles and everything out there and their little table. And they do a little dinner, and it's very quaint and charming, actually. So if you're interested in that kind of thing and picnic is your deal, come on out. Bring a bottle of wine. Sit under the trees before the show and enjoy.
I'm speaking with Ron Adams, who is the artistic director for the Redlands Theater Festival, now celebrating its 45th season. Ron, how did you get involved?
Good question. I was a young college student and taking some theater classes at Crafton Hills College. I saw the first year they did a show up here. I had some friends involved that were a little older than me, so I wanted to come up and see what they were doing. And again, I walked up that road, saw the lantern, saw the theater, the rusticness of it, and I thought, this is so perfect. What a place to do theater, and I wanted to get more involved. So I signed up for even more classes, and here I am 45 years later, still swinging a hammer and rolling a paint roller.
You were a student at Crafton, and Cliff was teaching at the time at Crafton Hills College. Did you go on stage, behind the stage? What has your career here been? Because you've done quite a few things here.
I try to do a bit of everything to learn the whole craft of theater. I've done set design, of course. I've done, of course, acting. I've directed. I've done sound design, tech director for a few years now, about 7 years. And in addition to all the artistic directing, there's the issue of building the sets and designing the sets and making sure your crew is on time and willing to work and not wanting to leave early. Of course, it's been hot a couple days, but that's okay. But at night, it cools down, and it's such a pleasant place to be. And all that goes away when you see the actors on stage. You forget about, you know, the hard work involved, because then it becomes a joy, and payoff is later.
Well, let's talk about some of the shows that you have scheduled for this season. You mentioned a couple, but let's go through them one by one so that we make sure we cover them all.
The Mystery of Edwin Drood is our big period musical. Charles Dickens, he started writing this story, but he didn't finish it. He didn't live to finish it. So that's kind of the twist on the play, is that the audience gets to pick the ending. There's like 7 or 8 different possibilities.
Huh.
So they vote on the ending they want to see and who the person is that committed the crime. So that's called The Mystery of Edwin Drood, and it's going to be done in a little bit different fashion. We're doing it a la steampunk fashion, which should be interesting for some people. We're not going to go full bore on it, but there'll be touches of the steampunk era, which is a Jules Verne style, turn of the century, the previous century motif, if you will.
Right. Okay. What else?
Okay, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, one of my favorite all-time shows. There's a delightful group of young adults playing kids at a spelling bee, like at a middle school, and it is hilarious. And again, there's audience participation. Last time we did it, I played one of the vice principals in the show and just had a great time. There's a lot of great music and dancing and singing, and the kids just do a bang-up job, and you can't miss that one. It's just one of the best. And then The Three Cuckolds, which is a nod to Commedia dell'arte. We're not doing it in typical Italian commedia style. We're doing it a little bit with a twist. We always do things with a twist. And this time we're taking the music of Louis Prima, that 1940s jive style music, and we're setting the play in a very loose 1940s / current day motif. So you might hear some current news stories, but you also will have the feel of the 40s. So it should be a lot of fun. And then we're doing Quilters. We've done that show a few times here. I think this is our third or fourth time, maybe? I think fourth. Again, it's a beautiful story about these pioneer women and what they had to endure coming across the plains in the 1860s, suffering from all kinds of things, starvation, the whole nine yards, losing husbands in the middle with a baby, what do you do? But it's a musical, and it's uplifting. Imagine that. With all that, it's uplifting. Beautiful story about, and the story that they live, they put in their quilts. So every quilt tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end, you see the story of their life unfold.
Yeah, that's very nice. All right, and Bullshot Crummin.
Ah, yes, the parody, 1930s parody. This is like the British Dudley Do-Right guy, who loves his country and stands for England and its finest hour, and he takes on villains and fights for the queen country. It's hilarious. There's a lot of funny characters, kind of like the Boris and Natasha TV show, if you remember that from the 1960s, some of you that are older. It's that kind of a feel. There's a lot of slapsticky, goofy humor in it, so it should be a nice treat.
The season starts in early July, and it runs through mid-August, and it's in repertoire, so there's a show every night? Is that how it goes?
Pretty much. We are dark on some Mondays, but every night there's a new show during our season, and we repeat a show maybe once or twice a week. So we take one show down, put another show up, take it down, put another one up. So in essence, an audience patron could see 5 shows in 5 days if they wanted to.
So one of the challenging things sometimes can be parking.
Mm.
And getting, because you really have to go up from the street, up
right.
to go back down. So explain it so people have a bit of better visual.
Well, some people do like to park on either Cajon or Highland and walk up and enjoy the trek up and enjoy the scenery and the trees and all that. It's part of the experience. But then we do offer a tram free of charge, and we'll take people up, and it starts around 6:30 before the 8:30 showtime, so about 2 hours early. And people bring their picnic baskets and their blankets, and they jump on the tram, and we bring them up to the park, up to the theater. So that is offered, and we do have handicapped parking availability as well. As long as you let our box office know in advance, we'll try to accommodate you.
What have been some of the mishaps or backfires or some of the things that you might have experienced, or has everything always run perfectly every season?
Well, funny story, about two seasons ago, about 15 minutes before showtime, there was a fire in the bamboo, and a transient had started a fire, and it got out of control, and we had to call the fire department. Somehow, the fire department came, put the fire out, and left before showtime, and the show went up without a hitch.
Wow, well, that's something. Is there any times when, I don't know, maybe the light doesn't go on or the sound doesn't happen? They're not all professional actors, right? Some of them, this might be their first place to get on the stage, right?
Correct. Our actors come from all walks of life. We have professionals from the industry that drive out from Hollywood, wherever. But we also have very talented local talent. You can find talent everywhere if you really kind of look for it. Musicians, all kinds of different talent. And also, one of the challenges could be what happens when things go wrong, right? What happens if the lights go off? Well, one time we did a play called Scapino, and there was a power outage in the city, in our grid. And for some reason, one little light bulb stayed on the set. So they did the whole show with one little light bulb. And the audience stayed for it, and they gave us a standing ovation because we trudged on and put it on without stopping.
True thespians.
Yeah.
When the summer's over, is the theater closed and nothing goes on here? Is that pretty much how it goes?
Good question. Yes. We have a strike night at the last show in August, and we will stay until everything's put away and the doors are put back up, and it goes back to the way it was when we opened it, and as if no one was ever here. And we usually leave around 2:30 or 3 in the morning, but it's a good tired because it's been a great season usually, and we're happy to put it to bed and then plan for next year.
Let's talk about something that's always on nonprofits' minds. How do you raise the money to keep the place going?
Well, we have a lot of loyal subscribers. Our season ticket holders are great. They have been around sometimes the full 45 years. Some of them come up and tell us what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. We love that, and we want to please them, of course. But they stand by us because they know what we're doing, and we're doing it not only for the arts, but we're doing it for Redlands and for the amenities of Redlands, and it just makes quality of life so much better. And they are our bread and butter, and also we do get people that donate their time. A lot of time and energy is donated, volunteers. Sometimes there are stipends involved, but we could never pay people what they're worth. So we do have a stable of volunteers that have been around for many, many years helping us put this on.
Great. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, Lillian.
The Redlands Theater Festival was one man's vision and a village who helped to make his vision come to life. The season runs July 7th through August 19th. For KVC Arts, I'm Lillian Vasquez.
You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Coming to Upland August 5th, Affordable Music Productions presents Legends of Doo-Wop, Soul, and Rock and Roll with Chris Montez, Terry Johnson's Flamingos, Carla Cook, and our next guest, Mel Carter.
sensible with your new love. Don't be fooled thinking this is the last you'll find. But they never stood in the dark with you, love. When you take me in your arms and drive me slowly out of my mind, kiss me, and when you do, I know that you will.
Now, there were many singers from that era and well beyond who were influenced by Jimmy Scott. But Carter actually got to share a bill with Scott when he was just 16.
Back in the day, there used to be movie theaters that had stage shows. You show the movie, and then they would have the stage show for a week, okay? On Saturdays, at a couple of the theaters, they had talent contests. If you won the talent contest, you got to work with the artist who was appearing there that week. Little Jimmy Scott was appearing with Lionel Hampton's band.
Oh, wow.
This was when I was 16 years old. That's when I got to work with him. He was the vocalist for the band then. That's when I first met him when I was 16 years old.
Gotcha.
He gave me a pair.
Wow.
I still have a pair of cufflinks that
he
had given me. And I told him about this when I saw him maybe 5 years ago. And then when he had his anniversary here at one of the clubs, I sang for him that night.
Oh, nice.
I was on the program to sing.
What did you sing for him that night?
Well, we had to do Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me.
Oh, okay. Of course. Okay. Well, you know, when I hear different songs that you've performed over the years, Hold Me, Throw Me, of course, that has this big open throat, full voice kind of thing, as opposed to something that I would almost not confuse with Little Jimmy, but more in the style of his singing, and that is with you doing Nature Boy. There's a few different feels for you out there. And of course, this is looking at various times that you've been producing music, or is it a stylistic approach, a groove that you were in at one time or another?
Before I was with Liberty Records, which was Imperial, was the first hit record, Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me, was done on that record. But before that, when I worked with Sam Cooke.
Right.
And then right after that, I was with Doris Day's label. And I was known, you know, like then as kind of like a jazzy singer. And when we got to Imperial, it was just finding a slot for what they wanted me to be. And that became the pop singer. And that's how Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me came about.
Did I read it correctly that you actually didn't like the song? Or maybe even I read that you hated it, perhaps?
No. And the reason why is because I thought I was a jazz singer before.
Okay.
You know, and so when we recorded it, I had to be directed to sing on the beat. And only in the bridge where I had the, eight bars where I could stray away. But other than that, I had to be directed right on the beat.
Oh, goodness. From a jazz perspective, that would be a different look at things. Let's talk about that era. You were with Quincy Jones in your earliest of days, yes?
Quincy recorded me at Mercury Records in 1958. We had I Need You So, an old Ivory Joe Hunter tune.
Was that just an initial recording, or did you spend time with him and even tour with him? Anything else beyond your time with Quincy?
No, I was never on tour, but sometime after that, I did three or four of his movie themes.
Okay.
That one, I remember, was from Banning. The Eyes of Love, that was from Banning, the movie Banning. But some of the other stuff that we did, you know, like God Bless the Child That's Got His Own, that was one of the things that we did with that session with Billy Byers.
Nice.
As the arranger.
Those exist out there?
No. I unless you got to Mercury Archives, I have the acetates to them. But unless you can get to that catalog that was on Mercury, you can't find that.
Gotcha.
If you do, then you have a gem.
Oh, wow. Yeah, like one of those Jelly Roll Morton piano rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, one of your early ones then also, while we were talking about it, with Sam Cooke, that was what, When a Boy Falls in Love. You were still in your late teens maybe here, is that right?
I was 19.
Okay. And now you were actually on Sam Cooke's label for this. I understand he does have co-writing credits for this one. Is that just because it was his label, or did he actually work with
you? I don't know how that came about, but it's Sam wrote that. He wrote that. He's the sole writer for that particular song. What happened, his label was Sar Records, and then he launched Derby Records with When a Boy Falls in Love, and that was the pop label. And it was the first record that crossed over and went pop from a black-owned company.
Oh, wow. And that was with your vocals. This is such a long time ago. I wonder if you could remember that feeling when you heard this song from a black label going pop, and you heard it on, let's say, the other radio stations.
Well, when you're that young, you just, if it's played anywhere, you,
yeah, sure,
you
sure.
accept it. But maybe Sam knew, but I don't think any of the people that were a part of the record session knew that that was going to be a historical kind of record, you know, the crossover from a black-owned company.
Yeah, certainly.
And that's pre-Motown and all of that stuff.
Let's talk a little bit about some of your more recent albums, at least newer than the mid-60s or so. Mel Carter Continues. This is, what, maybe only about 2 years old by now?
Just about.
Okay.
One of the tunes from that is being nominated for 2017 Cover Record of the Year from the Just Plain Folks Music Awards, and that's If I Didn't Care.
I had read that. What are these awards? I had not heard of this before.
Well, I hadn't heard about Just Plain Folks, the JPF Musical Awards, but it's going to be here in Los Angeles in August.
Okay.
Okay. But it's an award ceremony, very much like the Grammys or some of the other musical award shows. I think it came about from the recording engineers.
And they,
I'm not sure. You know, I know that that's how I got submitted,
right,
was from the engineer.
Well, on this album, wasn't it pretty much a collection of, I guess, covers? It's some big band type songs and some ballads. I only read about it. I haven't heard it yet. Is this the tune that you would have thought that would be the best cover song on that album, as it were?
Actually, this particular album is part of a trilogy. The first was Heart and Soul of Mel Carter. The second was Mel Carter, The Other Standards.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mel Carter Continues. And it's a visitation of the Great American Songbook, but there are songs that people may not think or recognize as standards, but they are standards.
Sure.
You know? And so I try to go back and, you know, breathe life into those songs. And a lot of the people that were around that I respected when I was growing up in these tunes, they stay with me. So when I go back and do the research, I just bring those songs out. But there was one by Little Willie John. You may not know about him, but Little Willie John was quite a dynamic singer. And he had a record called Talk to Me, which was a fantastic ballad. Then there was Johnny Ace with Pledging My Love, and I grew up listening to the Ink Spots. That's how I found, you know, If I Didn't Care. One of the things about If I Didn't Care, the lead singer was so stylized that it took me about 2 weeks to get that interpretation out of my mind. And Fred Sanford used to do, If I
right,
didn't care.
Right.
But that's what I had to get out of my mind then, you know?
It was my knowledge of Sanford and Son, you know, from when I was growing up. I actually knew of this tune before I realized it as an actual song once I started going into music of that era. I embarrassingly had to say, oh, that's the Fred Sanford tune. So some of the other newer albums, I had read about The Other Standards, so I'm glad we talked about that just as an album title. So Mel Carter Continues, that was part of that trilogy of albums. What was the first song, or maybe few songs? You know, you said that you always pack these things with you. What were some of the first several that just had to be on there when you decided to make an album?
We usually put together maybe about 100 songs and go through them, then rehearse with the piano to find out which one is better for me to bring life to it or something different. But Just in Time, one of the reasons why doing that is because the intro to the song, it's not even on the sheet music. The intro, we wanted to do that, to open it, because everybody does Just in Time, Just
right.
in Time, Just in Time.
But yeah.
This has the intro, and I loved doing that. Some of the other songs are, like I said, Pledging My Love.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of songs that I wrote. Actually, there are three songs that I wrote, and one is the duet with Lenny Welcher myself, The Legends of Rock and Roll, The Balladeers.
Oh.
And that's from a show that I had written. And Lenny and I had done excerpts of the show in Vegas, and we finally got around to doing the title song. But there's a song on there, The Way Out is the Way In, The Revolving Door Test, which I wrote. One of the other songs is It's Not the Letting Go That Hurts. It's the Holding On That Tears You Apart.
That's where that came from then. Okay. How old are the vintage Mill Carter and the Live in Hollywood DVD and CD?
That fall within the last 3-4 years.
Okay.
So relatively new in terms of when they were released. But the vintage DVD is of appearances that, unless you were there, you know, in the audience, you would not have had the access to what we've made available for people, you know, those actual performances. And on that, I have 12, 15 minutes of my mother and I singing, doing an actual gospel concert.
And where did that take place, with you and your mother?
That was here in Los Angeles, where I've decided that it would be my way of honoring her.
Beautiful. That's Mel Carter, part of the lineup with Legends of Doo-Wop, Soul, and Rock and Roll, coming to Upland August 5th. Tickets and more information at affordablemusicproductions.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org, I'm David Fleming. Now, going back to an old interview, this is with Dick Clark, and it could be the 60s or 70s. He looked the same in the 60s and 70s and 80s. But from this interview, you said that the hardest part of doing what you do is the waiting. The waiting for work, for the phone to ring, for your agent to tell you you got the job. I'm sure a lot of this is different by now, but what would you say nowadays the hardest part of doing what you do?
The hardest part,
yeah.
I'm glad you said that. The hardest part of doing what I'm doing right now is that I have a live performance in August, okay? Now, I've known about this 3 months. The hardest part is, like, if it were next week, everything would be okay. I go through a thing where there's an anxiety attack. It's all right up until the time that you walk on stage. When you walk on stage, it's like walking through like a veil, and then you're on the other side, you are the Mel Carter. Other than that, you are not. It's like the natural things that you go through and the preparation and all this. But I'm saying if it was a shorter time, everything would fall in place. But when you have a lot of time, it's a lot of thinking. You know, a lot, you know what I mean? It's like tying your shoe with a long string and trying to make it short so you don't trip over it.
I went through that this morning. Okay. For us, it's something to look forward to in 4 weeks or so. And for you, it's this thing hanging over your head.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, people don't realize, you're okay, when you see the person on stage, that's the end of all of what they've gone through. When you look at them, you don't think that they've gone through anything. It's like they put on the clothes and came right on the stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is not true. A lot of stuff that goes on prior to you coming out on stage and making it happen, you know?
So what do you do in those moments? You know, we all have different things to change that person that you were backstage and even in the wings. What kind of things do you do, even to this day, that help you get past those butterflies? Or is it just the knowledge that those butterflies are going to turn into positive energy? Do you have any methods or routines that you do?
I just do a lot of walking. A lot back and forth, back and forth. When you hear the chord for you to go, it's like a light went on, and you calm down and you go out. And it's good because you can use all of that energy,
yes,
you know, to catapult you out on the stage and for it to happen. You don't need the time to be on there for 10, 15 minutes before you hit a certain groove, you know. It's there because of all of that energy, the mass of energy that you're going through before you go out. For me, there are a lot of other people who are handle it differently. You know, I know that Barbara Streisand and Anthony Newley, both of them used to get really, really up to the point where they get sick. Well, that's what I've read.
Yeah.
You know, that nervous energy can put you into a place where you would be uncomfortable or maybe not sick. Maybe you would be sick in a way. And in a way it is. But the moment that you hear the music, everything is gone. And the other thing is, like, if you're doing stage or TV or film stuff, is that you're concentrating on the line, concentrating on what the character is about and everything like that. And there's a little bit of nervous energy in that until the line comes and that you're interacting with the other actor.
Yes. Let's talk for just a moment about what was, I guess, probably your biggest hit, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me. Was this a song that you already knew of and enjoyed, you know, the Karen Chandler version?
No, but I'll give you even one better than that. Sonny Till and the Orioles did it before Karen Chandler. And then the Orioles did it again after Sonny Till left.
Okay. So that was an Orioles pre and post Sonny Chen. That's really cool.
The song was picked for me through the head of A&R. Like I said, they were trying to find out where I fit.
So that was during
that
period.
Then they hit on that. And the other thing about that is that the song Hold Me, Throw Me, all of a sudden my heart sings You, You, You,
yeah.
Take Good Care of Her, Band of Gold, were hits by other people like 10, 12 years before I had done them. So I was known around Liberty and Imperial as the Bring 'em Back Alive kid.
Okay. Well, yes, that completely explains it in all honesty, because there were several things that, oh gosh, I only have eyes for you. I mean, this is much later into the 70s, but as time goes by, let's look at that one. And also Edelweiss, a lot of these tunes I had noticed were from other people. And so I really wanted to know if that was you or if that was management. By this point, they had already decided what type of singer they were going to be releasing you as.
In those days, when you got the hit record, then they wanted you to be an album artist.
Okay, okay.
So the standard tunes were that of an album, opposed to the single that you would be putting out.
Some of the folks were really just recording singles. There wasn't even a concept of an album. But by this point, in the mid-60s, at least, when you were recording, this is what people were looking for once you got a hit. Right?
Once you got a hit, they develop you into an album artist because that's the stability. When you hit and made an album and the album sells, then they would pull singles from the album. When you made albums, you know, from the singles, you were an established artist for that company.
Okay, gotcha. Now, this is going to your website, which is simply mel-carter.com. It's quite an active website. There's a lot going on there, a lot, of course, places where you can shop and stay abreast of upcoming performances and whatnot. There's also something that took me a bit by surprise, just because I didn't know about it. Talk to me about the Light People. Describe what it is, please, and then let's talk about how it came about.
The Light People are drawings of mine. Characters that I was imagining, and my friend Larry Colino, who was a publicist, we both thought of the Light People, you know. It was, you know, like some of the things that if you thought of your uncle or your boss or cousin or a friend or, you know, it's just characterize what you thought, and it would be like when the thought comes into your head, it's like a light, pop.
Ah, gotcha. That's where it is. And they are vaguely light bulb shaped as well,
right.
I suppose.
So that's why we call them the Light People.
Okay, cool. I want to address this. Again, it's mel-carter.com.
Right.
In addition to a bio and some news of various kinds, you have for sale, of course, CDs, cassettes, photos, and whatnot. You actually have for sale cowboy boots, sunglasses, even a pair of pants. The cowboy boots, these are just from commercials and movies. You accrued a lot of cowboy boots over the years, enough to start selling.
Yeah, well, I think for one role, I had to learn how to ride a horse. And the reason why I had the fear for horses was when I was thrown when I was a kid at the zoo. They had a horse ride, and I think one of the guys came back and spooked the horse and the horse. So I was really, really scared. So I had to learn how to ride the horse, and the thing is that you don't just get on the horse and learn how to ride. For 2 weeks, I had to go there every day and work in the stable. It wasn't so much for me to get used to the horse to get used to me, because horses are reactors.
Sure, sure.
You know, the pants, let me tell you, there's
yes.
a rock star that bought the pants. They're my idea that I call tie-dye.
Okay.
Where I just took the ties and sewed, made a thing down the side, and I call them the tie-dye. This guy that bought these pants, and he's had an album cover with
them. Oh, who was that?
I'd have to look up his
name. Oh, no. Okay. Well, we'll have to look for that one as well. There's a lot of things that we're just going to have to keep an eye out for without necessarily knowing who that is. Is this the same pair of pants that's like patchwork sewn together, that pair?
No, the ones that I'm talking about, it's called tie-dye. The
different ones.
Patchwork thing is a whole suit, and I'll tell you how I came about that.
Yes, please.
First of all, it was a Levi suit, okay?
Okay.
I call myself, like, you know, back in the day when you used to put Clorox on them.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so putting the Clorox on them, eventually the holes started wearing.
Yeah.
And so So in order for the cover the holes, the old stuff, that doilies.
Right, yes.
Remember doilies that people, your grandmother or something used to put on? I started covering the holes like that.
Ah, okay.
The seams started, so then I started putting the metal things in there. And what did I do next? Let's see. I started writing on it. So it's like, and I used that in a character called Motormouth.
Okay.
On Car Wash. I think it was Car Wash.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The DJ on Motormouth.
Okay.
And I saw that. Yeah, somebody bought that too.
Okay,
and
so yeah.
Some of the other stuff, I have a lot of, like if I were doing theater and you have a lot of downtime in theater waiting while the other actors are getting their parts.
Right.
Or if you have to do a song waiting, for that to happen. So then I would just take and like work on the outfit, my costume that I was wearing. A lot of times, just sew it and make things happen.
Gotcha. Okay. Excellent. Wow. Well, that explains some of these, the interesting pants, let's just say. That explains the interesting pants that I found for sale on the site. So it looks like something totally planned out, but it looks like it was something as the next thing rotted away. You had to refasten it somehow. That's how this thing came about.
The amazing part about that is that if you go down Rodeo Road now,
mm-hmm.
That stuff is in the window.
Yeah, that's true. Pay a lot for it, too. Way too much. Yeah, ripped before you even get them. Hmm. Well, let's just jump to not only the present, but the near future. We're going to see you in early August in Upland, California. It's going to be nothing but cool acts there. It's you and Chris Montez. We also have Terry Johnson and his Flamingos. And then also Carla Cook. So there's sort of
right.
a tie-in with Sam. There's several tie-ins. Actually, you charted with something that Terry also charted with.
I Only Have Eyes. I did that at Mercury Records.
That's it. That's
under Quincy Jones on. I want to say this is going to be the first time that I've appeared in Southern California in quite a number of years.
Oh, my gosh.
Most of the stuff that I do is back east. But I haven't been live performance in quite a while. I've just been working with music and writing and doing all the other stuff, and I haven't gone out. This is going to be quite a thing for me.
That's Mel Carter, part of the lineup with Legends of Doo-Wop, Soul, and Rock and Roll, coming to Upland August 5th, along with Chris Montez, Terry Johnson's Flamingos, and Carla Cook. Tickets and information at affordablemusicproductions.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Mel Carter, and with Affordable Music Productions, thanks to Nathan Goethals. Thanks also to Ron Adams with the Redlands Theater Festival, and to Jason Strain with the Diamond Valley Arts Council. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Mike Pesavento, and Ben Perper. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.